DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Sister Janice McCrane, who is a sister of St. Joseph from Chestnut Hill, Philadelphia. She is a spiritual director, disability activist, and environmental advocate, and she serves as board chairperson for Liberty Resources, Inc., a center for independent living. One of her primary interests is the spirituality of disability. She's also the author of Saints to Lean On. With Sister Janice McCrane, we go inside the pages of Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope, published by St. Anthony Messenger Press. Sister Janice, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, Chris, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
I love Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope, for so many reasons, not just because of the saints that you've chosen to kind of help walk with us in this journey, but for the fact that you really take on the issue of suffering. That's an area that we do everything possible to avoid even looking at it in our own lives, don't we?
We certainly do. It's just our I think it's partly our human nature, and then our culture reinforces it, that we just want to be, which is human, we want to be happy, of course, but the reality is that that was never really the way it was meant to be, and that's just not the way it is. That hard things come along, and we have to deal with them, whatever, whether it's illness or other struggles in life, like grieving or addiction. You know, we're not happy that they come along, but we have to deal with them, and that's where our spiritual lives come in.
No matter who you are, no matter where you're at, each person, whether you're someone in poverty or someone who may be what the world considers affluent, your suffering is something that's very much experienced and felt by the individual.
Oh, that's so true. I make the point in the book that the only person who really can say that they're suffering is the individual himself or herself, because suffering is very, very relative. And you're correct, even with someone with seems to be well off and having, apparently on the surface, a good life, still there are a lot of things and we don't know what goes on underneath the surface.
Talk to us about the saints that you've chosen for this particular book. What would you say they all have in common?
Well, I think they all have in common what we just said, suffering and struggle. And even sometimes with the authorities, almost every one of them. Joan of Arc certainly did. You know, they could not believe Joan's desire to go off and save France, and finally she was very persistent and did it. St. Damien, who's one of my favorites, he constantly struggled with the government to get just what his people needed. You know, the government of Hawaii at that time just wanted to dump the people onto Molokai and leave them there. So he was always in contention with them for food and supplies. Archbishop Romero, certainly such a wonderful man, and had the courage to challenge the system and the authorities in El Salvador, and finally gave up his life for it.
You also bring up a person that the United States bishops have put forward in a fairly unique way, all of them together, Dorothy Day. God, Dorothy Day.
Yes, uh-huh. Dorothy Day is the icon for justice for the 20th century, and she did a great deal through her founding the newspaper, The Catholic Worker, which started out at a penny a day and remains a penny, mm-hmm. just raising the conscience of the church and the country about the plight of so many people who were desperately poor and didn't have the social programs we have today, because she really functioned in the time of the Depression, more the 30s, and then turned to peace efforts later on in the 50s and 60s. So she was quite a strong advocate and activist for justice issues.
What has really been revealed about her, too, is that she drew strength from a very deep prayer life, a very, very much from her devotion to the Eucharist and just that relationship that she did have with Christ.
Yes, as everybody in the book did. She had a very significant mystical experience early in her life when she was in that searching phase that so many people go through before they realize that it's really Jesus they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And she had been at a protest in Washington, D.C., and went to a church and just suddenly knew what was her call and what she was supposed to do. And she was supposed to turn to Catholicism. And ultimately she did.
You bring up another saint that I truly love, and the stories that you hear about her tending to the needs of individuals, but also to the universal church. And of course, I'm speaking of St. Catherine of Siena.
Oh, right, yes. St. Catherine of Siena is just phenomenal. She's so awesome in so many ways. And she did tend to the needs of individuals who were ill, and sometimes receiving a lot of grief from her mother, for one, mm-hmm. and from others. But she persisted. You know, she had great courage. Then she went on to actually become most concerned about the church, which was not in good shape at that time. The papacy was divided. And she was convinced that the papacy belonged back in Rome, that the Pope should return to Rome. Because of her deep spiritual life, she was honored by the people of Siena. They had great respect for her. And she gained a reputation as a holy woman. So she wrote to the Pope, and he answered her. They had quite a flourishing correspondence. And she pretty much insisted that he return to Rome. And eventually he did, which is amazing.
The fact that she's only 30 years old.
Right, right.
I mean, during this time. I mean, what a remarkable witness to the work of the Holy Spirit in this one small woman.
Yes, right. She was one small woman, but she certainly was a giant in the spiritual realm. Even her early days of, she wanted to, it always interests me that she did not want to be, at that time in medieval times, there were very few options for women, of course, marriage or the convent.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted neither. So, interesting story about her is she was the 22nd of 23 children, and her family was anxious to get her married off. And in those days, that was at a very young age, 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
But she did not want marriage. So she cut off her hair, which was a very bold thing to do and infuriated her family because then she became most unmarriageable. So they retaliated by giving her basically a servant's job. And what I think is an indication of her spirituality, she responded not grudgingly and not angrily, but with pretending to herself that as she was serving her parents and her brothers, that she was serving the Holy Family.
Mm.
To me, it's just phenomenal. But she resisted marriage and didn't really want to seem to want to join the convent. I think she had a deep sense that there was something else, that God wanted her to do something else. And she certainly was right.
I love the layout of the book, Sister, Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope. I love it as much as I've loved your previous work, in which you've had this ability to be able to help us see the life of that person, but then also enter into a reflection on how that person and their story, they actually become more companions in what we're going through.
Well, that was my goal. So, you know, I had been in disability ministry in two dioceses, and I just became aware that people needed spiritual role models, people to turn to among the communion of saints, that people, well, first of all, everybody, mm-hmm. but especially people who are not well, because it can be very isolating and lonely. And I just, you know, felt inspired by the Spirit to, the book started when I was studying at Chestnut Hill College, studying spirituality, and I wrote a paper about Therese, the Little Flower. And a lot of people liked it, encouraged me to write more, so I continued, and that's how Saints to Lean On came about. And then St. Anthony Messenger, now Franciscan Media, asked me to write a second book, and that's how the second book came about.
You mentioned St. Therese from the Saints to Lean On book, that she had a great love for another saint that you put in here. And I have to say, I was surprised, but I was really gladdened when you had Saint Joan of Arc.
Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily think of her as a healer.
No, people said that to me. People said, Joan of Arc? I said, well, I'm looking at healing in a broad sense, just, you know, physical. And she certainly healed France at a time when France was torn apart, and France almost went down and was no longer France, and they were being attacked by the English. And she had her direct messages from God, you know, saying, go save France. And God bless her, she did. It's very difficult for us to realize how challenging it was for a peasant woman in those days to go address a count and you know, ask for a horse and ask for some knights to go and save France. The count thought she was crazy, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But she persisted, and she must have been a very persuasive person because he gave in, gave her a horse and a few knights, and off she went to save France and convince the king that he, who was really a very weak man, that he needed to return to the throne. And that she would help him do it, which she did.
When you think of how she suffered in the end, the burning at the stake must have been, and I don't want to belittle that, but it compared to the isolation, the abandonment, being rejected by her own people, the pain she must have suffered emotionally in those last weeks, compared to that burning at the stake, I mean, my goodness, this girl, what she went through.
She was 19, yes.
Mm.
Yes, I think the betrayal by the king must have really hurt. She kept expecting to be rescued from the castle where the English held her, and it never happened. So, in addition to that, she was chained to the bed under constant threat of sexual harassment from the guards. And what really amazes me is, you know, generally we admire her and are aware of her courage going into battle, saving France. But what amazed me is how intelligent she was. Uneducated, but intelligent, because she was standing in the dock the whole entire day, and the lawyers, the church lawyers, and who were trying to pin heresy and all kinds of crimes on her, there were many of them, and they would take turns. And she held up quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this, fortunately, because there's a transcript of her trial.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a sense of Joan as more than the woman who rode into battle, but also an intelligent young woman who certainly had a bright and inquisitive mind and was able to fend off the charges.
Hmm. Talk to us about the one we should look to who was healing the slaves of New Orleans.
That's Henriette de Lisle, yeah.
Mm-hmm. She's a venerable, yes. Venerable Henriette, yep.
Mm, that's correct. She is one of my favorites. We don't know a great deal about her. She didn't leave a journal or anything like that. We just know a little bit. But she was born into New Orleans in the early 1800s, where they had a very unusual, I guess we could say, setup called Plissage. And at that time, the wealthy gentlemen from England and Spain were over there making their fortunes with the plantations. However, their wives and their children were back in Europe, so they definitely did not want to be alone, so they would take, in effect, a mistress. A whole system grew up about this. The mistresses were women who generally were of color and were very brought up to be very refined and, you know, the social graces and speak French, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But Henriette de Lisle, although her family expected this, kind of like Catherine of Siena, did not want to take part in this. She, first of all, considered it immoral, and I think she, in her soul, knew that there was something else for her. So she refused, and a lot of family tension about that, and then went on to found a religious community of her own. She wanted to join a religious congregation that was already in existence down there, but because she was of color, they said no.
Mm.
So eventually she founded her own. What, of all the things about her that really drew me to Henriette, and still does, is in the census of 1830, because her father was one of the French gentlemen, and her mother was half African-American and part some Spanish blood, she was actually a woman of color. But she and her two siblings did not look as though they had any color in their background at all. They looked very white. So on the census, her brother and her sister put down white because, for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. it was much better in that society to be white. But she refused to do that, and she wrote Free Woman of Color. And mm-hmm. I thought that was just so amazing, to give up all the privileges of being white to claim who she really was in God. Certainly inspired me.
There's an authenticity. I mean, there's integrity, you know, all these different types of things, even in the face of persecution and suffering.
That's right.
The saints that you've put here, they know their identity, don't they?
Yes. Sometimes it takes a little while to realize that, but then once they do, they do.
Mm-hmm. What I mean by that, of course, is that they're children of God. They have that relationship, and they're very secure in that. And I'm so glad you brought forward, not a saint yet, but he should be, Father Michael Judd.
Isn't he? He's just amazing. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the definition of a hero, and you put it right there in the very beginning, when others are running from a burning building, a hero is one who runs towards it.
Yes.
And he certainly did that in all reality.
He did. He was a bit of a character in his life. He was very, very loyal to his firefighters. And that ministry came about later on in his life. You know, he was a parish priest. He was a college administrator. And then one of his Franciscan brothers asked him to fill in for him to be a chaplain for the firefighters, and he agreed. And he became really close with them, went to the fires with them, said the funeral masses, and, of course, on 9/11, when he heard the news, he jumped into his chaplain gear and rushed down there. Chaplains and other, you know, fire chiefs, et cetera, were not expected to go into the fire themselves. They had a staging area where they stayed, but not Father Michael Judge. He went right in with his firefighters, and was not in there long when he was hit in the head by debris from the building and is considered the first official death of 9/11.
Mm. The book is Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope. And that's, I think, really key. It almost takes courage, doesn't it, to hope in these days? Maybe it always has.
Yes.
But it seems as though, you know, to be able to put our hope in something besides a person or a government or even an institution, per se, it's who do we put our hope into, sister? I mean, that's what makes the difference, isn't it?
Yes, and that takes me to my first book, Julian of Norwich, mm-hmm. who lived in very terrible times with the plague and the Hundred Years' War going on and a famine in England, and yet, through her revelations from Jesus, her famous quote that is often referred to is, "All shall be well." Mm-hmm. that was told to her directly by the Lord in her vision. And to me, living in those times and being able to proclaim that is simply amazing. So when I, sometimes, I don't know about anybody else, I feel overwhelmed by the news that's so constantly violent, and I just remember her, and all shall be well, and try to live out of that. And that, of course, is based on her relationship with God, as every single person I wrote about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you brought together quite a twosome. And that first paragraph in Chapter 6 on, of course, St. Edith Stein and St. Maximilian Kolbe, their lives couldn't have contrasted more fully.
Right, right.
And yet they were brought to the same point.
Yes, and they never knew each other, although they were definitely contemporaries. And they both died at Auschwitz. And they both had tremendous courage in very, as you're saying, very dark times. He was a Catholic from birth, and she was strong Jew from birth. You know, her background was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Her conversion is phenomenal. And even after her conversion, she lived rather modestly, teaching high school in a girls' high school in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that fascinates me is how conversions are not always being knocked off your horse. Generally, they unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And with St. Edith Stein, it was, she read, one night, she read the autobiography, the Vita of St. Teresa of Avila.
Mm-hmm.
Very touched by that. Later on, realized she needed to be a Catholic. And then later on after that, realized she needed to follow Teresa of Avila all the way and become a Carmelite. And so thus she did. The Carmelites tried to save her, move her from their convent where she entered in Cologne, Germany, to a convent in Holland. But because the Dutch bishops had the courage to speak out about Nazism, the Nazis retaliated by rounding up all of the Jewish people who had converted to Catholicism, and that included St. Edith Stein.
There's so much in the book. I hope we've touched on so many that are in here. We didn't have an opportunity yet to really talk about Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, but her story is pretty well known.
Yeah.
But I wanted to close with this remarkable now doctor of the church, someone we don't know very much about, really, but we should, shouldn't we? Of course, that's Hildegard von Bingen.
Yes, yes. Another incredibly amazing woman and so talented. She had migraine headaches, which apparently gave rise to her visions.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, her visions were definitely authentic. They were validated by St. Bernard of Clairvaux. And her visions, and she wrote and explained her visions. In addition to her spirituality, she composed many chants for feast days for her sisters, and was a beautiful artist, and was highly regarded for her knowledge of medicine, which at that time consisted of basically herbs.
Mm-hmm.
She was certainly well-rounded, and obviously, as I'm sure you know, to be a doctor of the church, one has to have left some writings that teach us, that lead us to a deeper relationship. And her writings certainly finally have been recognized for that. So I was delighted when Pope Benedict honored her with, and actually she was never formally canonized, but now she is St. Hildegard.
A wonderful surprise.
Yes, it was. I was surprised, but delighted.
Because when you think about it, I mean, you think about the saints that, and we love them, and we've learned so much from Ignatius of Loyola, Louis de Montfort. I mean, the list goes on and on. They weren't made doctors of the church, however.
That's true. Yes, you're right. I didn't think of that.
So there must be something that Hildegard, along with John of Avila, have something to say to today's world.
Yes, definitely. I think a part of it is their deep spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And expressed in different ways, but it's a spirituality that today we so desperately need. I think I know that there's still a deep spiritual thirst out there. People are looking for authentic prayer experiences and authentic role models, and that's one reason that I, put together the book.
They're Saints for Healing. And where they'll lead us ultimately is in that encounter with the person of Jesus Christ. And
yes.
From that, so they can heal those inner wounds to give them courage and hope to be able to be a witness in their various forms.
Yes, yes, yes. Good way to put it. Mm. I think we need to bring Jesus to our wounds. They might not always completely heal, but that's all right, because if we have Jesus with us, we become, the phrase, the wounded healers. And we know what suffering is like, and we know how to invite others to bring Jesus to their wounds.
Well, Sister, it has just been a delight to be able to speak with you, Sister Janice McCrane, on Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope. Any final thoughts?
Well, I think that in our day today of so much disillusionment with our supposed heroes, I think we need genuine heroes, genuine role models we can turn to and get to know. And I think, as I said in the first book, it is good to, reading the book, if you feel drawn to a particular individual, it's good to get to, even though the person's in the communion of saints, it's good to get to know him or her better. And, read about the person and try to talk to the person from your heart, and you'd be surprised what can happen. I consider all of them my friends, but some a little more closer friends than others.
I love it. I hope you're writing a third book, Sister.
Oh, I hear that all the time. It might be a little more personal. It might be a little more my story, what I've learned from living with a disability.
Mm.
So I just ask your listeners to say a little prayer that I kind of wrap my head around it and get it the way the Holy Spirit would want it to be.
Well, that will be our prayer. Thank you so much, Sister Janice McCrane.
Okay, thank you, Chris.
With Sister Janice McCrane, we've gone inside the pages of Saints for Healing, Stories of Courage and Hope. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to AmericanCatholic.org, the website for its publisher, St. Anthony Messenger Press, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to DiscerningHearts.com. This has been a production of DiscerningHearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.